Paul.
Yes.
Let's see, you just want me to tell my name?
Yeah, just give your name and date.
This is the 5th or?
6th.
6th. This is August the 6th, 1971. And we're sitting in a house here that was built, according to the records, over 100 years ago. And that's right.
This is Judge Charles M. Decker.
All right. And there are various tales about things that happened in this country and others way back down the line. And one story that has always interested me was a story about supposed to be a lost mine here on the Blanco River. When I was in medical college back in 1913, Joe Park, who finished in medicine that year and went to practicing here at Kyle and San Marcos, his father owned a ranch there on the Blanco River. And Joe said that when he came home Christmas and came back down to medical college, he's telling me about a Mexican came down and told his father that he had found something that was very, very valuable to him, Mr. Park, up on his ranch. And they went up there. He wanted him to come up there. He told him.
Where's this ranch located, Judge?
It's Martin's Ranch, right up the river here.
Okay.
The ranch is now belongs to the Martin family. And it's on the Blanco River about 12 miles from San Marcos. Anyway, this Mexican family lived down on the river in a house that was there and worked some land. They had some farmland down on the river. And he came down and told Mr. Park that he had found something up there that was worth untold money to him, Mr. Park. And wanted him to come up and let him show him where it was. And Mr. Park wouldn't go. And said, oh, just a lot. He told him that what he found up there, they had a pet goat. And the men were in the field at work and this goat scampering around and they could hear it bleat, but they couldn't find it. They finally found it, getting late in the evening, down in a big hole. The hole was about as big around as a barrel, they said, but underneath it was spread out like a cave in, down in there. And the only way they could get the goat out was to tie a rope around one of their children, a little boy, and let him down in the well, in this hole. And he untied himself and then tied it on the goat and they pulled the goat out and he dropped it back down there and they pulled him out. But as Mexicans said, that there was a big opening down in there, big cave-like, and that he saw a lot of stuff in leather sacks. He couldn't make out what it was. And there was a big ox cart down there, and the wheels, of course, on an ox cart were way too big to go through that hole on top. It is about the size that they let the kid through. The hole on top is about as big as a barrel. And they said that there's a lot of guns stacked against the side of the wall down there. So this old Mexican found a rock right there close by, a big rock, and he cut his initials on it and the date and turned it over upside down on top of this hole that they let the kid through. And he wanted Mr. Park to come up there and let him see what is in there. And Mr. Park said, oh, that's a lot of foolishness. He wouldn't do it. And after years, when I came up here, I had to quit medical college on account of my health and settled up above between Wimbledon and Fisher's store on a ranch in 1916. And Joe Park was practicing medicine here in San Marcos at the time, and he told me that they sold the cedar off of that ranch. And Mexican, the boy that was up there cutting that cedar, came in his office and told him that he had found something up there that was worth a lot to him, to Dr. Park. And he said that the boy wanted him to come up there I let him show him what it was, and I said there was a lot bunch of cedar cutters in there cutting the posts out of the pasture, and he didn't want to stay there. He wanted to leave and come back later after they were through. He's afraid that something would happen to him if they found out what he had found up there. So he came back, and he and Dr. Park went back up there, and he described it just like the other man had. The Mexican had to Mr. Park, and said about the guns and the stuff and sacks down in them, the leather sacks, and the big ox cart wheels, and that about the sun shining through the wall, cracking the wall, on the well, evidently going about sundown, and so they could kind of locate the direction that where it was on it, with the sunset shining through that crack in the wall. But and he said that he was cutting a big cedar tree out there, and he was standing on a rock, and as in cutting that rock slipped, and he turned it over. He noticed there's a hole under it, and he turned it over, and the date was cut on it, and it was the date that the Mexican gave Mr. Park and the Mexican's initials. He had turned it over upside down. So this boy put the rock back over the hole and cut the cedar down, threw the brush on top of the rock so that nobody would find it. And in the meantime, the cedar cutters had moved out, and they set all that brush afire in there and burned it out. And they couldn't find that. The boy couldn't find that rock after he got up there. And he never did find it. But years after that, there was a man came here at the house one day and wanted to know if he could go down in our pasture, goes to the Blanco River, but on the opposite side from the park ranch, and prospect around, see what he could find. And he went, but he never did find anything down there. But he had, then there's another man came in here, and he had all everything that he claimed to find, that if he could get anywhere close to it. And he wanted me to take him up there and show him about where it was. It was the old fireplace chimney from the house a Mexican lived in had burned, but the old chimney still standing. And I had passed it a number of times up in there. So he wanted me to go up there with him and show him, but he told me before we left that I wasn't to get anything out of it. It's all going to be his. So I just never did.
C.M. Decker, Charlie Decker.
I am C.M. Decker, Charlie Decker. And I was born in Knobnostra, Missouri, the ninth day of June, 1891. My father was a country doctor up there at that time, and my grandparents lived in that neighborhood. In fact, had been there since before the Civil War. It was time that that country was open for settlement. What could go in there? And before I was old enough to go to school, my father had double pneumonia twice one winter. And he had to leave that cold country down there, and we moved to San Antonio back about 96. And I went to school there in San Antonio and finished the high school in San Antonio, and went and intended to study medicine. I went to Southwestern University and Texas University, and my eyes played out, and I went down, stayed on a ranch down in South Texas, and eyes got better, and I went back to medical college, went to medical college, but when I got home the next spring, the doctors claimed I had TB in both lungs, and it put me to bed for a good while, and finally I went back down on the ranch, stayed there till 1916, and moved to Hays County. And been ranching here in Hays County ever since. And some of the things that I used to get a big kick out of listening to these old cowmen that went up the trail down in there and the stories that they had to tell. And I've always been kind of a fanatic about these old stories. And I'm just trying to give you a few of them here now. Is that all right?
That's great.
Now, you want me to tell that over?
No, I've got that.
Well, can you cut that off just a minute? There's one story I was always interested in, and that is the how the cattle business got started in Texas. When the first Europeans came over here, there were no cattle in the country. The Mexicans brought, the Spaniards brought some cattle over here, and horses and donkeys, and a lot of them got loose, wandered off. And that was in about 18, what the Sam hell I've got it here someplace, a date. 1859. 1595, I'll get it right after a while. And they made expeditions all through, traveling all over North America, and carried along cattle. They didn't do any settlement, tried doing the settlement until much later. It was in several, a couple of hundred years later before they ever had many people over here for settlements. And in the meantime, some of the cattle got loose and wandered all over the United States, and some of the horses and goats. And the sheep that they had, but the varmints took care of the goats and the sheep. And the Spaniards established a colony in Santa Fe, New Mexico in 1595. And they took horses and cattle and donkeys up there with them. A lot of these got away from them. And they scattered all over this North American continent. And later when they commenced settling it up, there was lots of wild cattle all over Texas. And after the Civil War, Texas was had a lot of men, they lost a lot of men in the Civil War. And they came home and had to find something to do, somewhere making a living. And they at first butchered these cattle and packed them in salt barrels and salt and shipped them out. Now there was one old Major Nance who came out here in early days and settled here on the Blanco River in Hays County. I had put in a mill down there on the river and what they called a packing plant, a packery. And the big pool of water on the Blanco there is still called the packery. It was there at the packing plant. They butchered cattle and put them in barrels, salted them down, put them with the choice pieces in barrels, and shipped it out by water. But that got played out, and they went to driving them up the trails. But all these cattle, that they found a use for them, and they then went to gather them and brand them when they drive them up the trail. And they belonged to one man as well as another. And all the fella had to do was to record his brand and go to brand the cattle. And some of them didn't know to record their brand. And somebody found out it wasn't recorded and slip in and record the brand. And of course the cattle were in his name then. And the other fella found it out. There's usually a good deal of trouble before they got through with it. Been quite a few killed over that. But that's the way they handled it for quite a while, going up the trail. But as the railroads moved further out, they finally got it out to, they first started out and shipped to Sedalia, Missouri. That's where my people lived. I've heard my grandfather and grandmother tell about these Texas cattle coming up there, and their cattle would die with some strange disease every time a bunch of Texas cattle came through. We afterwards found out it was a Texas tick, fever ticks, that dropped off, and the young ticks got on the cattle up there, and they died of the fever. And the Texas cattle were immune. They'd been raised up on that way. But then they moved the cattle, moved further west, wouldn't let them come through there, and the railhead got out to Kansas. And they drove the cattle up to Kansas to load them out, ship them out to market. And some of them they drove on up that they thought would take some more, food, get them better range. And they went up into Wyoming and Montana with them, took them, drove them that far. And the, kind of lost my chain of where I had it going, huh? I'm losing a lot of your tape. These cattle sold well when they got up into Kansas and returned a nice profit to the men who brought them up down here and had the intestinal fortitude to drive the wild cattle and point them toward the North Star and keep going till they got up into Kansas. All kinds of things happened as they went up. They had to cross swollen streams and rivers, and had all get dry, and they'd make about 10, 12 miles a day, and it took a long time to drive them all the way through. As a long trip back up there, and when they got through, got the cattle up there, these boys that drove them up there had a lot of them been out so long on the road several months, and they had a turn loose, and you heard all kinds of wild stories when they got up to Kansas, shooting scrapes and things that happened up there. And then they had to come back and bring these horses, drive the horses, and they came back, of course, a lot faster than they went up. But some of the tales they told about things that happened on the road up there, I can remember quite a few of them. One of them was a story about Al Blocker, whom I knew well down there, told me the story one night. But he was driving and they'd taken a herd through for his brother John. And there was another cowman right ahead of him with a bunch of steers. They both had bunches of steers. And when they got up in Canada, when Ab got up to Kansas, it's always customary to pick up any cattle that somebody had gone ahead and take them with you, turn them over to them when they got up into Kansas. And he found a bunch that belonged to this man that went before him, and he gathered them up and was taking them along, turned over to him when he got up there. And in the meantime, the Indians had gotten wise to some of this, and they had to pay a bounty to get through the Indian territory. The Indians met them, demanded so many cattle for them to cross. Well, when Ab got up there into the territory, as they called it, these Indians came out and demanded cattle for crossing the trail and gave him a note from the man who was right ahead of him telling him that be sure and give these Indians some cattle for letting him cross up there. And so he did. He gave him some of his own cattle. He just turned them over to Indians. And when they got up there in Kansas, this fella told a joke that he thought he'd played on Ab. And a bunch of them came out to see him. They were going to have a big fun when he got close up. They rode out to meet him. And he asked him if the Indians gave him the note, and he told them they did. And he said, well, they gave him the note. and he saw who signed it, and he told them all right. So he just gave him that bunch of some of his own cattle. And he asked him, said, "Ab, did the Indian give you that note?" "Yeah." "What'd you do?" He said, "I turned the cattle over to them." They all hollered and laughed, you know, and he said, "Who did you give them?" "Well," he said, "I picked up some of yours, and you said give them to them, and I did." And the other man said, "Ab, you damn fool, you knew those were my cattle." He said, "Well, you said give them to them, and I did, so yeah, I've got the note to prove it." And another one that I used to like to hear, my good friend, Mr. Oldham, Arch Oldham, who was from Hays County, and some of his descendants are here now.
Oldham, Roger.
Up at, where they live in Wembley. When I came here, he was county commissioner at that precinct. And his grandson, Charlie Oldham, was later commissioner, and now his great-grandson, Jack Oldham, is commissioner up there. Been three of them in line. But Mr. Oldham, the older gentleman, was a trail boss for the Driscoll people. They were big cattle people back in those days. And he went up the trail and took the cattle up, and he said it was, they had trouble keeping help, and they had to do, get what they could, take what they could, and he said he was getting pretty short-handed, and there's a fellow rode up one day and wanted a job. He said in those days it wasn't polite to ask questions. So he just needed some help. He just gave him a job, put him to work. He said he stayed with him about 2 weeks, and they got up the road quite a little ways from where he joined them. And one night they came in, and he and a Mexican had the last herd around. They had to ride around the cattle at night to keep them quiet and watch them. And he, this white man and a Mexican, were the last two to come in to breakfast. Said it's pretty cool up there in Kansas, in Oklahoma. And they were eating breakfast. Got up, most of the hands were eating breakfast. Two relieved these two, and they came in. And they'd had a racket out around the herd that night. And they came in and sat down on opposite sides from the fire from each other, eating breakfast. And the Mexican come as quarreling at the white man. And they'd been out there with him. And this white man said, I said his plate down, said, "Now we've settled that out there around the herd this morning, and I don't want to hear any more out of you. That's all over." He picked up his plate and went on eating. Pretty soon the Mexican said something about it again. And Mr. Oldham said that this, when he did, this white man told him, "I told you to shut up." And the Mexican said something out, and he said he just reached back and jerked his gun and shot the Mexican right between the eyes. Fell over backwards on the other side of the fire. And he said all the boys that hadn't gone to the herd got a horse right quick and left. And he said, this man said, "Oh, sit down and eat your breakfast, nothing but a dead Mexican. Go on, eat your breakfast, don't let that bother you." And but they saddled up and went to the herd to get away from there, and said he was left there with him. And the fella finished his breakfast, and he said, "Well, Mr. Oldham, I guess you better pay me off and let me go, because the officers would be hunting me for killing this Mexican fool off. Said they were hunting me when I joined your bunch here. As a rule, they never think about boys going up a trail being anybody that's there." And said, "We're about 2 weeks from where I joined you now. I don't know what you're paying, but just pay me off and let me go." And he said, "Take out enough to pay for the burying that Mexican, and I'll go on." He said, "My name is John Wesley Hardin," who was one of the
famous bad men back there claimed he had 32 notches on his gun when he died. Mr. Oldham said that he didn't argue with him a bit. He just paid him and let him go. I cut it off for medicine.
Okay.
While I was in university, my eyes played out, and I had to quit school for a couple of years, and I went down on a ranch down below Carissa Springs, not on the Rio Grande River down in there. And of course, at that time, that country was pretty wild. There was a lot of those old timers down there. That's when I got to know a lot of them and visited with them, worked cattle with them. Of course, I was just a green city boy when I went down there, and I had to learn to ride and rope, so on. And they had lots of fun out of me, played all kinds of jokes on me. But I had a lot of fun out of it too, and didn't mind. So it wasn't long till I was one of the boys. And I used to get a big kick out of sitting around the fire at night and listening to these old timers who had been up the trail tell the stories that happened to them up there, various ones of them. I've forgotten a lot of them till right at this minute, but there's lots of stories that they told. And while I was down there, the eyes got better and they thought I could take it. I went back to medical college the next year. And I'd been there just a week. One of the Saturday afternoon, they worked us in those days down in these colleges. Saturday afternoons all we had off. I came out of the medical college. That winter, saw looking around over the crowd, and one of the boys raised up and looked over and pointed at me. I took him to be a peace officer from the way he was, some sort, the way he was dressed. And he came over to me and he says, "Is your name Decker?" I said, "Yes, sir." "Charlie Decker?" "Yes, sir." "Well," he says, "I have a subpoena here for you to go to court, be in court at Cotulla Monday morning at 9 o'clock. And the district attorney down there says you're an important witness in some cases they're going to try. I want you to tell my instructions are that if you won't come, I'm to bring you." And he said, "Will you go?" I said, "Yeah, I'll go. You don't need to take me." So I went down there. And while I was down there, before I went back to medical college, Pancho Villa's men were raiding up and down the river there, and they one night our sheriff went out with three deputies. He heard there's some Mexicans in there, and they stumbled on at the camp, and these Mexicans caught the ex-sheriff and one of the deputies, a Mexican deputy, and the other two got away. Came back for help. And a bunch went down there to help them the next day. A bunch of us followed the trail. It was raining all the time, but we trailed them through that country 2 or 3 days before we ever came up on them. And the old sheriff that they took with them was nearly dead. We got him, sent him back to town.
Why was he nearly dead? He'd
had his hands tied behind him and forcing him to walk through all that rough country. And they got to a windmill and wouldn't even give him a drink. But when we rode up, his brother-in-law was with us, and he went out and made a deal with him to let him keep Mr. Buck, who was the ex-sheriff, and we'd turn back. Well, he couldn't talk, his tongue had swelled in his mouth. We got him revived, and he told us what had happened. They'd killed a Mexican deputy the night before, and so they went.
These were Pancho Villa's men?
It's supposed to be. It's supposed to be some help from Pancho Villa that were coming through there. They unloaded a lot of stuff at Carissa Springs and were trying to smuggle it into Mexico. And they run into them down there. And so they got up a bunch of us and we went back down there. I think there was 16 of us and there's 22 of them. And it rained all the time and we had trouble keeping up with them and finding them. And finally, they built a fire. And it's the first time they'd built a fire. And we saw the smoke and went to them early in the morning. And they were down behind the bank, commenced shooting at us. And of course, they were sent in. Meantime, the post over at Eagle Pass sent five soldiers down there, a lieutenant and four enlisted men, all in cavalry down there, horseback, same as we were. And everybody fell off his horse and went shooting. And finally, the old Mexican, supposed to be the Capitan, they call him, raised a white flag, waved it up in the air from behind this bank. And we told them, throw the guns down and come out. And they came out, and we had killed four of them. And two got away, went up that dry creek while the shooting was going on. And we took the rest of them in. Finally got a wagon to come and pick them up. Somebody down in that country got to him. Somebody hunted him up and brought him down there. And he loaded his men on this. We loaded the rest of them on that wagon. Two of them were wounded. And we brought the others in, put them in jail at Carissa Springs. And that's what they took me back to court for. And one of these Mexicans was supposed to be quite a hero of some kind, but the two of them got away from us, crawled away, as I said, and we brought the rest of them in. And they killed one that night when he run out and shot at the present sheriff and one of his deputies, and this deputy shot the Mexican, killed him. And he didn't have but three shells in his gun, and he hit him under the eye the first shot, and then two more run down his middle. And they got to their horses, and they didn't have any more ammunition, and went back to Carissa for help. And that's how it started. But anyway, they got them back to Carissa Springs, and they were trying them then, and Barry had to move them. There's 14 of them that they had to try. They had to move them around from place to place and to try them, to get a jury. And that's where I was called down to Cotulla. Well, I went back from Cotulla. I went back, it kept me 2 weeks, and I went back from Cotulla and was almost caught up with the class. Well, here came that same sheriff. I had to go to Carissa. And then to next place, I stayed 2 weeks. And then I had to go to Dilley. And I went from one place to another down there, spent a whole lot of the winter, and of course was way behind with my classes. And in order trying to keep up, I caught a bad cold and was thin. And when I got home, my father got worried because my mother had died many years before that with TB. And father was always worried about it. So he told me to go over and have a Dr. Hull examine me. And I told him I wanted him to examine me. And he said, no, he wanted me to go to the other man, other doctor. So I went over there. And the doctor got through examining me, told me he'd call my father and tell him. I said, well, doctor, I'm past 21 now. And I think if I've got anything about it with me, you ought to tell me. Well, it looked like made him kind of mad, and he said, well, you've got TB in both lungs, a hard liver, and an athlete's heart. And I said, well, I might have an athlete's heart, but I don't know. I played football when I was a kid. rode Bronx after I went down to that lower country. First one thing, another like that. I could have an athlete's heart. But anyway, I went back over and told my father what he said. So they put me to bed. And I stayed in bed for quite a while. And finally got up and went back down to Carissa. Stayed down in there for a couple of years, up to 1916. And in 1916, it hadn't rained on us in 2 years down there. I was just about broke. And my father told me that he had traded for a ranch up between Wembley and Fisher's store. And for me to go up and look at it, and if I wanted to move up there, he'd turn it over to me. Well, I went up there, and after coming out of that dry country, I got up there to Wembley and found out that every little hollow had a creek running through it. There's springs all over this ranch. And that old grass up there was way up knee-high and waving like a wheat field. I thought I'd really found a cow country. I went back down there and shipped what I had left, went up back up to Carissa, and then bought steer yearlings and stocked the place. But I found out that wasn't much of a cow country after that. It was better sheep and goat country. So I traded out and moved down closer to San Marcos. I moved down here on this place in 1930, and I've been here ever since. Raised my family here. And let's see, I guess that's about it.